Have you enjoyed listening to the CrowdPaw Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some CrowdPaw merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to CrowdPaw.org/merch, CrowdPaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your CrowdPaw look.
I was one of the only Black kids at my school. Never saw anybody that looked like me, never had a teacher that looked like me. I was profiled quite often, actually. As a sixth grader, I was accused of being in a gang. Like I said, I'm a first generation student. I was raised by a single mom, and I had to figure out a way to pay to eat and go to school at the same time. I recognized pretty early on that that was something that was affecting my identity and affecting the way that I saw myself in spaces. Just be a voice and a light for like what science can look like and what STEM can look like. Who cares if you go to a university that's like the best in the US or not? Like, if you're passionate about what you're doing, you're gonna go far.
Turn this up, turn this up. Your professional development is one of the keys to your career success. When you combine your desire to grow with actionable steps, your journey to success becomes an incredible reality.
Hi, I'm Paul Faranvi, aka Incredible Paul, and welcome to Incredible Paul Leadership, where we learn how to become the most incredible versions of ourselves by learning from each other. First off, if you're only listening to this episode, you can also watch it on YouTube. But regardless if you're listening or watching it, I really appreciate your support. Today, I have the honor of having Monet Sawyer, future Dr. Monet Sawyer, on the show. She is a PhD candidate in biomedical engineering at Boise State University. She is passionate about research and empowering women and minorities in STEM. So now just a little bit about you, Monet. But how about you introduce yourself the way you would do it?
Yes. So thank you for having me. I am so excited to be here today. Like Paul said, my name is Monet Sawyer, and I'm a PhD candidate in biomedical engineering. My research sits at a really unique intersection between material science engineering and biology, where I get to utilize material science principles to try to solve some of the most prevalent healthcare problems. So it's really exciting. I get to do a lot of interdisciplinary work, but because of that, I get the opportunity to work with a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds and a lot of different fields. And that's my favorite part about doing what I do. And so I'm incredibly excited to be here today and talk a little bit about that and a little bit about how my journey has really shaped how I come at science every single day.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's dive right into the journey. So you're in the biomedical engineering, you kind of sit interdisciplinary. Is that something you thought about doing? Or walk us through how you got to where you are now.
This was not the track that I expected to be on 10, 12 years ago when I started college. I started in psychology and criminal justice. And honestly, the reason why I did that is because I was obsessed with the show Criminal Minds. And so I really wanted to be a criminal investigator. And so that's why I started college in psychology and criminal justice, but pretty quickly learned that that wasn't for me. And the way that I learned that was that I wasn't excited to be in the classes. I wasn't excited about the things that I was learning. And I prioritized other stuff outside of that, but I was also working like four jobs at the same time. Having passion for the things that I was doing, it was sort of like that was just on the back burner. Like at that time, it felt like I was just going to college to go to college, and I didn't really have a passion for what I was doing. And so the work that I was doing outside of that, like working at the front desk at one of the dorms at my university, I worked at a place called Jump Time, where it's like a trampoline park, but I got to work with a lot of kids. I also worked at the mall in a retail store, and I worked at Starbucks. So I did all of these jobs at the same time, sort of just to pay for school. And I quickly realized after my first 2 years that I needed to change my major because I was honestly going to fail out. Like I was not doing well in my classes. I wasn't even going. And I had thought about becoming a pilot, like an airline pilot, because I thought it would be really fun. Turns out you have to have really good vision to do that. Have like the worst vision. But I was thinking to myself at the time, I remember distinctly because I was in California visiting my dad, and I remember just seeing all the aerospace companies around and being like, I'm really interested in that field, but I obviously can't be a pilot. As a first generation college student, I literally had no idea about anything that really existed out there as far as like careers or anything like that. And so I was with my dad and we were driving around and I was like, I wonder like what kind of engineering I could do or what kind of science I could do, because I loved math and science in high school. And I was still attending Boise State. So I looked at what engineering they offered, and material science engineering caught my eye because it was a combination of like chemistry and physics and math and like just what is a material. Everything's made of a material. And I was like, okay, I can get behind that. That's kind of exciting. And so I switched my major, and that's what I've been in ever since. And I absolutely love it. When I decided to go to grad school, I wanted to figure out a way to use that material science background to help people and to apply it to healthcare, because I was really interested in that aspect of it too. I took a biology class and fell in love, and that's why I chose biomedical engineering for my PhD. So now I get to combine material science and I get to use material science to apply that to biology. So I'm still a material scientist at heart. But I know a little bit about tissues and the musculoskeletal system.
just a little bit.
Just a small amount.
I think it's probably a lot more than what most people know.
Yeah.
No, that's an incredible story about even the fact that I can't believe you're working four jobs and going to school.
Yeah, that was rough. But like I said, I'm a first generation student. I was raised by a single mom, and I had to figure out a way to pay to eat and go to school at the same time. I was lucky enough to get quite a few scholarships based off of like my grades and the extracurriculars I did in high school, but it didn't cover everything. So I just had to figure out a way to get through it. And when I switched to material science, I took a class from this professor that ended up being my undergrad research advisor. And he offered me a position in his lab and helped me get work studies so I could quit all of my jobs and just focus on school and research.
That's awesome.
So that was a huge change in my trajectory at that point. And that I feel like he's the reason why I went to grad school, because he showed me what science and research could really be when I never had an idea of that before.
That's awesome. You can give him a shout out if you want.
Yeah, his name's Eric Jankowski. He is now the Dean of Material Science and Engineering at Boise State. He started off I took the very first class he ever taught at Boise State, which was computational materials engineering, where we basically used computers to study things like molecules and stuff like that, create these models, which I've never heard of before. I fell in love. I was obsessed. So right after that class, I emailed him. It was summertime. And I was like, I know that you have a lab on campus. If you have any space for me at all, I will do the work for free. I just want to be in the group. And he emailed me back right away and was like, if you can make it into our lab meeting next week, which was just like a few days from the email that I sent him, he's like, you have a job. And so I was like, okay. So I just showed up to the lab meeting, had no idea what anybody was talking about. I was so lost, but I ended up staying in that research lab for 4 years. So yeah, it turned out to be a great experience.
That's so cool. This, the initiative that you took after taking that class, and even that person as like a mentor to you, it seems like working is now, that's so amazing.
Yeah. And I could like that initiative, when you send an email or you ask for anything really in academia, the worst thing that someone could say is no. But most of the time they want to help and they want to see you succeed. So if they don't have the answers for you, they'll help you find it, at least from my experience. And so that was the first time that I recognized that the people that were surrounding me were there to help me and wanted to see me succeed and wanted to see me do well. And since that moment, I've never not sent the email. Like if I am wanting something, that's how I got my internship in slice microscopy. I reached out to the someone who was not directly the hiring manager, but she had reposted the position. I reached out to her and sent her images that I took on my own Zeiss microscope and told her how passionate I was about microscopy. And that's how I got my interview for my internship there. Yeah. So it's like the worst thing someone could say is no. The best thing that they could say is I have an answer for you or I can find it for you, which is a great experience to have all around. So
that's so true. The worst thing that they can say is no. I think a lot of times, this is incredible, Paul, leadership, so I'll tie leadership principles into it. But a lot of times, like with leadership, is the first thing I always say is just seeing yourself as a leader.
Yeah.
And then the confidence that you're able to ask the question, because a lot of times people are afraid because they don't want to hear no, or they've seen rejection so many different times.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've heard this, but I've heard this a few different times, that rejection is just redirection. So if that person does, they say no, that you just go somewhere else.
Yeah. And I feel like I've definitely heard no way more than I've heard yes. But I don't look back on it and think, oh, that was a no. Like, it's exactly that. It's like, oh, well, I didn't get that opportunity, but something else arose that might have been at the same time or might have, like, conflicted. And it just works out. Like, you never know unless you try. And as long as you're trying, it's going to work out the way that it's supposed to. At least that's how I feel about it. And all the no's that I've ever gotten have always turned into something else, especially when you work so hard, like even for like applications, for example, you work so hard for it. The work that you did is not lost, because you can use that and use that information and use all the work that you did for the next thing, and it's going to work out. And that's sort of the way that I have gotten myself through grad school, because you hear a lot of no's in grad school.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you have plenty of stories talking about the no's, but I definitely, we can talk about that, but I also want to give you a chance to talk about all the stuff you do about empowering women and minorities in STEM, because I know you do a lot in that area, and that definitely resonates with me.
Yeah. So I should start by saying that I, again, live in Boise, Idaho. I grew up here. And so if you don't know Boise, one thing that you should know before I start is that it is not very diverse. When I went to school in middle school, elementary, high school, I was one of the only Black kids at my school. Never saw anybody that looked like me, never had a teacher that looked like me. I was profiled quite often, actually. Mm. As a sixth grader, I was accused of being in a gang, despite having straight A's. As a sixth grader, they checked my locker in front of the whole school, called my mom in. Despite having never done anything wrong, they were just looking for whoever was doing the tagging on my school campus. And I was one of the people that they decided to look in their locker, look in my backpack, check all of my stuff in front of everybody. And at the time, I was like, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not going to get in trouble. But as an adult, I'm like, oh, there's a reason why I was the one. And so when I went to Boise State, I recognized some of the same patterns, not necessarily in, profiling, because it is a more diverse university than my middle school and high school years, of course. But I did recognize that there were no professors that were Black. I have not, in my collegiate career in engineering, had a professor that was Black. And I recognized pretty early on that was something that was affecting my identity and affecting the way that I saw myself in spaces, affecting the way that I saw my success. And at the time, I felt really alone. And I felt like that throughout all of my undergrad, unfortunately. Yeah. But I love Boise State so much. I love the support that I've gotten from the university. Obviously, I've been there for 11 years, so I better like it at least a little. but I do love it a lot. I feel like I've gotten a lot of support in this aspect. But when I started graduate school, I recognized that I wanted to actually make a little bit of a change. I wanted to be the person that freshmen are coming in and looking at and saying, I have a community because I have her because she started that community. So I wanted to be someone that I didn't have when I was in my undergrad. And so I joined the National mm-hmm. Society of Black Engineers, which ended up allowing me to find my cohort on campus, find other students that were interested in the same things that I was interested in. But to me in Idaho, it just didn't feel like it was enough. So my first year of my grad program, I started a program called Yours Truly, Monet, and I got a $1,000 scholarship from my university to go around to high school students in the area and talk to women and minority women in particular about STEM opportunities available for them in the state.
Wow.
And I got a lot of backlash about how I couldn't create a program specifically for minority students. And I didn't care. I started posting about the backlash on my Instagram. And students found me there because they wouldn't put my flyers in the schools. I found the students another way. Was a really great opportunity for me to start doing that. And I no longer run that program anymore. I wasn't able to secure more funding for doing the kinds of things I wanted to do, like STEM days and things like that. But instead, I brought all of everything that I'm doing to the internet. And I use things like TikTok, Instagram, all of that to try to connect with people in that way. And that has been really successful. I have moms reaching out to me about their 16-year-old daughters that are interested in biomedical engineering, and they're not allowed to have TikTok, but their mom shows them all of my videos and things like that. I have tried my very best to weave the fact that I am a Black woman in STEM, how rare that is, and how it can feel so isolating into everything that I do, so that the next student, the next cohort, what have you, that stumbles across my content or meets me in person, or we meet at an event or we network, they don't feel as alone as I did. And you want to know something? I almost cried in my building the other day because I saw material science engineering building. I've been working in this building for years since they built it. Mm-hmm. I have never once seen another Black woman in that building. There are like four or five Black women undergraduates in material science and engineering at Boise State University that I've been seeing every day this semester. And it is like to see that and to know that I was one of six women to graduate from my graduating class in material science, but the only woman of color. And then to see all of these students in my building at my university it's been insane. And so I know that was like kind of like a long-winded answer into like what I've been doing. But I know that I said I was excited for some things that are coming up. I'm actually doing this event for women innovators called She Tech. And next week, I am going to be hosting a tech challenge event for 500 middle school students, and they're all girls.
500?
500. And they're all girls.
That's amazing.
I'm so excited. I'm so pumped up for it.
Awesome. Yeah, so by the time this comes out, it'll have already happened, but I guess talk through what this is. Like, is this all virtual? Like, how does this...
It's in person.
It's
in person, yeah. So Women Innovators is an organization that is putting this on, and they've done it, I think, a couple times previously, but it's called She Tech, and it's a technical challenge for girls that are interested in STEM, and it really allows them to see how they can innovate and how they can come together and how they can collaborate. What I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be hosting the technical challenge. So their challenge is to figure out ways to clean up three different waterways. So the ocean, rivers, and lakes, and different prototypes that they can come up with. They really only have an hour to do this in the whole concept. It's an entire day, but they only have an hour to like come up with the challenge or come up with an answer to the challenge. And so they're going to be coming up with this answer for how to clean up waterways, and they can come up with anything. They obviously don't have to like make it right then and there. It's just like a prototype or an idea. They put it all together on paper, and then they pitch the idea. And then there's going to be an entire competition for the top three. There's going to be like an applause-o-meter, which is me. I'm gonna gauge the applause, which is the part I think I'm the most nervous about for these innovations. But the amazing thing about it is that I'm starting off with a presentation. I love presenting, so I'm really excited about that. And I'm gonna talk about the strengths in scientific collaboration and the strengths in interdisciplinary research and coming together with people with completely different backgrounds than you to come up with a solution to really big problems, because that's what scientists do. No one does science alone. And I love to give that message, because a lot of people don't really recognize that. Like, all the science that I do is based on science that was already done. And all of the science that I'm doing currently, I do with other scientists. And so given the opportunity to present something that I'm so passionate about, they found me and they were like, we're so excited you're available. We're so excited to have you, because I'm passionate about exactly what they're trying to implement for young girls that are interested in STEM-related fields. And so I hope that these girls seeing me and seeing that I grew up in Idaho and they're all in Idaho as well, and just having the opportunity to do everything that I've been trying to do my whole academic career, which is just be a voice and a light for like what science can look like and what STEM can look like and how we can really innovate for the good of all without any socioeconomic boundaries. And that's really what science should be.
Yeah. So that's an incredible mission. It's incredible what you're doing with the collaboration and really 500 middle schoolers.
I know. Me either. When they told me the number, I was like, where did you find these students?
That is so cool. But we'll definitely make sure when this comes out, like we'll link to whatever highlights or stuff from it so people can check it out.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you're doing. And even the mission that you're able to take what you were doing at your school, you said it was called Yours Truly Monet, right?
Yeah.
And then you just take it to social media. Yeah, I've seen a lot of your TikToks on Instagram as well. It's like, it's so, because you make it fun, which is what I appreciate about it too. Not that science isn't fun, but I think sometimes people can think like, oh, it's boring, blah, blah, blah. But make it engaging and fun, what I really appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, everything's about discovery, right? Anything that you ever do is about discovery. And I think that if you have a passion for just knowing things, then STEM is the place for you. You will find a place here, because I think that passion is like 80% of it. Like, science for me is like 20% of it. I love science, but I wouldn't love it if I didn't have the passion for discovery, not necessarily just the passion for science, because I like to know how things work, and I want to know how to tweak things to make them work better. And I think that if that's something that you are into, then you would be a great scientist. And I think that being able to portray that makes it fun for me too. I mean, like, I can definitely get down. It's a PhD. It's really hard. But when I'm making TikToks or I am making content, it's like, I have to make this fun for it to be engaging, but making it fun makes it fun for me too. So in those downtimes, when I'm feeling a bit low, I make a TikTok or I make a reel or something. I talk about something that I'm passionate about, and it reminds me why I love it so much to begin with. I mean, I posted a video the other day about how I color code my notes, and it was so fun for me to make, for one, but I just love color coding. I have a passion for that too. So
just organizing things, making things fun,
making it pretty.
That's really pretty.
Yeah.
Yes. Science can be pretty, science can be fun.
Yeah.
And you're proof of that. Right. So that's really good. So I guess even going further back, because I know you said coming in Boise, that you're trying to figure out where you're gonna go, and then you ended up choosing materials engineering,
yeah,
and then you got into the biomedical side. At what point did you feel like you wanted to go to grad school? Was it I know you mentioned your mentor was, or at what point did you realize grad school is the answer, or did it have to be, was it more of a process?
That's a great question, and I love answering this question, because remember when I told you I almost failed out? Like, I really almost failed out. Like, my GPA was like a 2.0. I was not doing well. I was on academic probation until I switched to material science. But when I went to material science, my grade point average skyrocketed. I had like a 3.8, 4.0 every semester. But my ending grade point average was a 2.9. And anyone that knows anything about grad school knows that you cannot go to grad school with a 2.9 GPA. They won't even look at your application. And so luckily for me, I had done a lot of research in my undergrad. I had shown that when I switched to material science, I was doing a lot better. And so I had to advocate for myself when I decided to apply. But I worked for a year. I was an intern at ON Semiconductor, and I worked there as a material science intern. I was on the research and development team. And that internship was only supposed to be like 3 months over the summer, and they extended me for a year. Long time. So I was basically like a full-time employee there while I was finishing my last year of my undergrad. And in that year, I realized that that was not what I wanted to do. And that is the feedback that I give to all of my undergrad students that I've mentored over the years, is that it's okay to not go straight to grad school. Like, if you look at my trajectory, it looks like I just went straight to grad school because I interned and worked for a year at the end of my undergrad. But had I not had that year of experience recognizing that research and development for industry is not research, it is not research in the way that I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to get to do whatever I wanted and like innovate and come up with ideas. But there are things that need to be done for the company. And that's what we're doing. And so there wasn't a lot of creativity for me. And that's, I think looking back now, that's the reason why I decided to go to grad school. But at the time I was like, this isn't working for me. I don't want to work in the semiconductor industry. I thought that with a material science degree, that's all I could do. Again, my parents didn't go to college. I don't have any experience with any of this. It was just what I knew. And so I decided at the end of that internship, they offered me a full-time job, and I turned it down and decided that I was going to go to grad school. And when I decided that, I knew that I wanted to go into biomedical engineering. I didn't know what I wanted to study. I just knew that I got a minor in biomedical engineering towards the end of my undergrad, and I really liked that. So I wanted to figure out how to do that. And I looked for open positions at Boise State because of the fact that I already had my network there. People knew me. People knew that I was going to work hard, and they might look past my grades. And they did. They looked, my advisor that I have now looked at my grades for my material science program. He advocated for me for my application to go through the graduate college and offered me a position. And I have a 4.0 in my PhD. Like, I knew that I could do it. I knew that I just had to find the passion. But that's sort of like why I decided to go to grad school. But for a long time, I didn't think I was going to even be able to get into graduate school. And so I was, you know, limited on the choices I had for the university that I went to because of that. But I don't feel like I was limited, because at Boise State University, I have everything that I would ever need for the type of research that I wanted to do. And that's another thing that I tell my students, too, is that who cares if you go to grad school at the same university that you did your undergrad? Who cares if you go to a university that's like the best in the US or not? Like, if you're passionate about what you're doing, you're going to go far. And so I have I've had internship opportunities. I have opportunities for applying to faculty positions, and I stayed at the same university, and that didn't limit the opportunities that I had. And I'm really happy that I did, because a lot of good has come out of the time that I've gotten to spend at Boise State. And had I not spent as much time there as I have, I don't think that the same opportunities would have arisen for me. So it's worked out really well. But at the time when I decided to go to grad school, like I said, I felt like I didn't have a choice, but I was making a choice to go to school when I was offered a full engineer salary. So that was my choice, and that's the choice that I made. And I'm really happy that I did. And I'm really happy that I was able to fight for myself and advocate for myself. I was like, I worked four jobs. I almost failed out because I was trying to eat. And now I have good grades and I'm going to be a good PhD student. And I've proven that over the years. So I feel really happy with where I'm at, even though it's like the hardest thing I've ever done.
I'm sure. Yeah. And What I really love about your story is that it's one of discovery and it's also one of resilience. Yeah. Because I think a lot of times when we come across things that are hard, sometimes it can be easy to think like, oh, it's hard. It was easy at some point and then it becomes hard. And like, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case with you. You were like, no, I have a passion for this. I'm seeing things that I want to do. You were able to get advocates so you can go to grad school at Boise State. You're able to continue in your PhD journey, all of these things. And the fact that, because I feel like a lot of people would wait until they got through their PhD or all this stuff before they tried to help others. But the fact that you're helping others as you're going through this is not something most people do.
That's what keeps me going. Like, I'm going to be straight up about it. Like I said, I've said it a million times, but getting a PhD is the hardest thing I've ever done, but it is the most lonely thing that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. You have to think about how you're going to care about something more than anybody else in the entire world is going to care about it for years. And it's going to feel like this thing, if it doesn't work out, is going to ruin your life. And that's really how I felt. Not anymore. I worked through it. But that's how I felt when I started my PhD is, yeah, if this doesn't work out, what am I going to do? Because I chose to do this thing and I left my engineering job and this has to work out. And as a PhD student, the passion that you have can be dwindled very quickly by the stress and the anxiety and like the loneliness that couples with that. And so every single summer I've taken on an undergraduate student and teaching them what I know and them asking me questions about what I do just asking me questions about my trajectory in my life. And then them looking at me like, I want to be her. That's crazy to me. That is crazy to me because I never thought that I would be like a mentor or somebody for other people to be looking up to. But then my undergrads tell me like how much they why they're doing the things that they're doing because I inspired them to do it. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm the one that inspired you. That's crazy. But looking back on my whole PhD experience, that's what brings me back up. Whenever I was feeling down, it's usually at the end of a semester, honestly. It's like, okay, what did I even get done this semester? But when the undergrads come in the summer, it's like, I'm so excited about it. And I get to do my research, but I also get to train them to help me in a way that makes my research easier for me. And that they also take from that mentorship as well. And they gain a lot from that too. And I think that the success of any mentor is their ability to provide mentorship in a way that helps them. And I had an undergraduate student that was an RU student. She worked with me one summer. She got the RU again at my university in my lab for the next summer. I left for an internship for the entire summer, and she gathered all of my preliminary data from how I trained her the summer before. And that turned into our first manuscript. She went to the World Conference for Undergraduate Research to present this work. And that's the reason for doing it. And I always tell her, like, if I ever start my own lab.
Are you wondering what's next? Has everything you tried failed? Or maybe you just feel stuck? Then coaching may be right for you. The coaching relationship is a relationship totally centered on you. So what are you waiting for? Go to incredipaul.org/coaching so I can help you become the most incredible version of yourself.
You were the first student that I'm going to hire, and she's waiting for it. I just think that if you mentor well as a graduate student, it makes your life easier. But to mentor well, your mentee has to be taking stuff from that too that makes their lives easier or enriches their lives in some way. And that's the great mentor-mentee relationship that I've had with all of the students that I've mentored. And I've gotten a lot from it personally, mentally, and academically and professionally as well. So it's been the biggest highlight, I think, of my PhD has been the opportunity to mentor other students.
Yeah, mentorship is so key, and you do it so well. What you highlighted, and I think a lot of mentorship traits go hand in hand with leadership, because what you were talking about, with you were gone the whole summer, and she was able to gather all the work
by herself.
Yeah. And now because you're able to lead her through and teach her the things she wanted from, I guess, from the previous summer. So she wasn't even there during the academic year. So that you're able to instill that in her, that even a year later, that she still could do it.
Yeah, exactly. And she's the best. Her name is Liv Nielsen. I'm going to drop her name.
Oh, yeah,
too. She goes to Idaho State, or U of I, sorry, University of Idaho. And she actually ended up landing a lab position there after she left us the first summer. The research that we did and the experience that she gained ended up landing her a lab position. So she's been doing research for a few years now. And she is on all of my papers as an undergraduate student. She's going to be on a patent that I'm filing. She's going to have some ownership in the devices that we have developed. And it just turned out to be fantastic. She's going to be in my network for the rest of my life. She's one of my really, really good friends now. And I just feel lucky to have had the opportunity to even mentor students, let alone create such lasting relationships with them. And my advisor always asks me first if I want the undergrads to come work with me, because I just always have such a great time with it. And really, a lot of grad students don't want to mentor undergrads because they feel like it's extra work. But like I said, if you do it right, then it's a lot less work, and you can have undergrads that that work really well for you, and you guys work really well together. So it's always been a positive for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a positive long term.
Yeah.
I remember being in the lab as an undergrad working with some grad students, and there's some that were more open to it than others. Yeah. Some at the beginning, they're like, oh, I have to do this. But then after a while, they kind of warmed up, because I'm like, hey, I'm here. I'm hungry. I want to learn. I want to do different things.
Yeah.
So I think really important to build that relationship and even to share your story, because I know you've been doing it for a while, because I remember the first time, and I didn't get to hear the whole thing, but I think it was the years are wrong, I think it was in 2021 for like the Pacific Northwest. LSAM had a conference, and then you gave a keynote for that. I didn't hear the whole thing, but I heard part of it, and I was like, you have an incredible story. I remember I reached out to you on LinkedIn. And then got, because also we had just started it was LSAMP alumni group at that time, but Nala STEM. And I was like, you want to get connected. And then really from there, be able to watch all the stuff you've been doing really over the last almost 4 years. It's just been incredible for me to see.
Thank you for saying that. And like, yeah, that was 2021. I remember, because I was looking at my resume today to send to my boss. So I was like looking at that. It was 2021. And that was like my first keynote ever. But it was my first like invited presentation of any kind, let alone something that I was so passionate about. So that was honestly a transformative experience for me. It made me realize that I really love doing this, and I really love speaking on these things that I'm like passionate about, and I think that they're important. I've given an additional keynote for the LSAMP conference recently in person here at the Pacific Northwest. And that was amazing, because being in person and seeing all of these faces, my husband actually attended, and I cried afterwards, because I was like, I've never seen so many people of color in one room. And that really like resonated with me in a way that I didn't expect. So I gain so much out of being a member of LSAM and getting these opportunities, and not just at Boise State, but like the conferences I've gotten to go to, and even this last one in Washington, D.C., where we saw each other for the first time in person. I messaged my husband right when I got there. I was like, I've never seen so many Black people in the same room, but, and we're all passionate about science. This is crazy. Yes. And that was a phenomenal experience as well. I accredit a lot of my growth and my confidence in speaking, not only about science, but about my journey to being an LSAMP, because being in a room where people are there to hear about your journey, and that's the reason why they're there, has like a profound effect on how confident you feel when you're speaking about it. So LSAM has definitely changed that for me.
Absolutely. LSAP is a game changer. It was one of the first experiences I had while I was in undergrad. I was fortunate enough to be a part of it from like the second semester of my sophomore year, which I don't know how you got exposed to it, but I think someone just gave them my email because I was like, I never signed up for this. They were like, oh yeah, we're trying to start a student organization, blah, blah, blah. Like who's all involved, wants to get involved and knows about research. And I was like, well, I'm already doing undergraduate research. And I didn't know that LSAMP helped with that. And then I got involved with that. And that was in, I think, like in 2014.
Okay.
And yeah, literally like almost 11 years later, still doing a lot of stuff with LSAM. I never knew it would come this far with doing stuff with the alumni, with my local LSAM and Inspire. And then coming up on 5 years doing stuff with LSAMs really across the nation. So that's been really cool.
Yeah. I honestly got started with it at the end of my undergrad. I wish I had heard about it sooner, but I was another thing for going to graduate school is that if you aren't necessarily competitive, like I wasn't in my GPA, coming with your own money helps. And so I was talking to some people that I knew on campus, and I got connected with Catherine Bates, who used to run the LSAMP program, the Bridge to Doctorate NSF program at Boise State. And she told me about this program, and she's like, well, you have to be involved with LSAMP to apply. And I was like, well, what's LSAMP? And she's like, no one ever like, no, no one ever told me about it. And so that's when I got involved, was knowing that being involved in this program might help me go to graduate school. But it ended up turning into something way more than that. It ended up turning into a community of a network of people that I'm going to be connected with, I think, for the rest of my career and my life, hopefully. And mentors that I never even imagined would be in my life have come out of LSAMP. Yeah. Donna Llewellyn, who ran the Bridge to Doctorate program at Boise State after Catherine Bates left. She is the one who has asked me to do a bunch of keynote presentations or told other people that that's something that I would be good at. And so she's helped me get a lot of these opportunities as well. But yeah, that's how I got involved with LSAMP. And I'm so excited that I'm still a part of it. And I'm even more excited. I've been like reaching out to LSAMP at Boise State, as well as people that I met at the conference we were just recently at, about how I can be involved after I graduate, because I don't want me not being a graduate student or me not being a student anymore to limit my involvement with LSAMP. So I have some things on the horizon, hopefully in the near future after I'm done with my PhD. So.
Oh, awesome. No, that's good. And definitely with Nala said, we'll definitely want to get you connected, like even out of that university or other universities, as much as possible. So to get your voice out there. So that's good. I was going to ask a question, then I lost it. Maybe we'll come back to me. But so we were talking a lot about STEM and like your journey, but I know that Monet Sawyer is more than just STEM.
Yeah.
So is there anything else about you that you want the audience to know about?
I'm a professional model. So I do fashion and print modeling. I've modeled for Sony Electronics. I've been in commercials for my university as well as at, like other universities. I played a scientist before. and I am a scientist, which is really fun. They're like, you seem like you would know how to use a microscope correctly and your models. So I've been doing that for the last 6 years. It sort of just started a fun creative outlet for me. I had reached out to a photographer and asked her to take pictures of my husband and I for one of our anniversaries, and like this was a paid photo shoot. I paid her. She became a really good friend of mine, ended up being our wedding photographer. But when she posted our photos, people started reaching out to me on Instagram and asking if we modeled professionally. And I was like, yeah, of course. Why? Of course we do. That's our first time, but yeah, we do. And so we started modeling together, my husband and I, and he still models with me sometimes. But then my modeling career went from being something that was just for fun and something that I did for photographers locally to something that I was starting to get paid for. I was getting a lot of women on Instagram and everything reaching out, asking me how I did it. And so I did two modeling workshops, two summers in a row, where I invited models to come and learn from me. I put on a whole class. I hired photographers. We did like style. I styled all the photo shoots, styled all of the clothes. My first workshop, I had over 60 models sign up or say that they were interested. I ended up having 18 that I felt like I could handle. And that was still so many. I set up these 15-foot backdrops that I made out of like, they look like stone. I made them in my garage. And like, so like the creativity and the passion for things really extends way past STEM. But being a model and getting to model and do these workshops from other models, like I have videos of me sitting in my living room with all of these women sitting in my living room with me on chairs that I rented. And I'm like giving them a lecture on how to model, how to post on Instagram, how to set your rates, how to reach out to photographers, like how to style yourself, all of this. I sent them a styling guide weeks in advance so they could pick out their outfits. I hired a makeup artist, like everything. And I did that two summers in a row. And takes a lot of time, as you can imagine. So unfortunately, this last year, I didn't have the time to do it again. And I just went back to sort of like solo modeling. But that is another thing that I am really passionate about and a thing that's allowed me to be creative and allowed me to gain more confidence as well. And I still do it. I'm actually modeling. What's really interesting is my research is in osteoarthritis. I'm modeling for a PA who has her own shoe line that's specific for people with arthritis or what have you, that are they're like comfortable orthotics, but they're fashionable too. So I'm going to be modeling for her next week. And like the worlds have just collided. So I'm a scientist researching arthritis that is modeling for a PA who makes shoes for arthritic customers to be a little bit more comfortable during their day. The shoes are so cute. So I'm super excited, but it's just turned into a lot. Like some of my modeling has turned into science opportunities and some of my science opportunities have turned into modeling opportunities. So
when worlds collide.
I know. And my research was actually featured at my university for the College of Engineering, but it ended up being featured because Boise State was named one of the most innovative research institutions in the country this last year. And they featured my research when they did that. And so there's this place at Boise State, it's called the Luminary. And it is all of these like crazy screens that are super high def. You could put anything on them and it looks like almost like an art gallery. I don't know if you've seen like the ones in LA that are just like all of these screens and the art changes and what have you. We have something similar to that at Boise State, except they put my research on the wall. Like art. And then I did a photo shoot in front of like my stem cells that I created this protocol for looking at them with scanning electron microscopy. And so those images were on the wall. And I did a photo shoot in front of those. And that was highlighted by the World Congress.
The World Congress?
Yes. Like my picture in front of my stem cells for Boise State's innovation over this last year. So it's just, it is crazy how these things collide, but I have found a passion and I found a passion for these things and figuring out how to get them to work together so I could do them at the same time has been ideal.
that's really good. So there's so many different things that you're doing. So how are you able to, I guess, do all of it? Like, how do you not get overwhelmed? How do you rest, I guess?
I get overwhelmed. I'm just going to be honest about that. I really do. These last couple of years, I've been really bad at making time for myself and saying no to things that I don't have time for. And just being honest with myself about what I'm capable of doing. And so it gets to the point where I am doing so much that I'm not sleeping, and I'm not doing those things well because I'm not sleeping. And it got to the point where it was taking an effect on my physical health. And at that point, I was like, started to recognize that I can't go like this forever. And I want to make it out of my PhD and be healthy and not have to recover from this, because I'm not giving myself time to recover during it. And so one of the biggest things for me this last year was implementing boundaries. I don't work past 5 p.m. because I work at 5 a.m. I don't. I used to work through the night. Used to work. I would do all-nighters all of the time. I would be in the lab at 5 a.m. and then I would not leave work until 5 p.m. And so I work an 8-hour day now. I don't work past that. There are some things that, you know, deadlines pop up and things need to be done. Yeah. And obviously, like, that I don't have any control over. And so sometimes I do have to work outside of my boundaries. But so far, I've set those boundaries. I go to the gym 3 times a week at least. I make sure that I'm eating 3 meals a day. And I know that that sounds like a simple thing for someone to do, but I spent years just skipping lunch and having coffee for breakfast, and like maybe having a smoothie, maybe having a protein bar, but just like eating dinner. And then by the time I got to dinner, I wasn't even hungry because I hadn't eaten all day. And I got to that point, you know, so I wasn't taking care of myself. That it took one of my undergrads telling me one time that it's not admirable to not rest. And I was like,
wow.
Okay.
Your undergrad told you that.
Yeah. And then she would tell me it's not admirable to not rest, and that when you don't eat, your brain eats itself. That's what she would say to me all the time. And she'd really call me out. She'd be like, did you eat breakfast this morning? Like, did you sleep last night? And I was like, I'm not setting a good example. Like, I don't want my students to think that this is what you have to do to be successful. This is what you have to do to get it done, because it's not. I just didn't have boundaries. But now that I have those boundaries, I am way better mentally. I make sure to set time aside for myself. I travel. That's another huge thing. I love traveling. And so I make time every year to make sure that that's something that I'm doing. And when I do it, I don't bring my laptop and I mute my work email. and just like making sure that I'm taking those times to unplug. And that's really how I've done it. But as far as, you know, doing the modeling workshops and getting a PhD, things like that, that take a lot of your full undivided attention, I've had a lot of support. And so for my modeling workshops, my husband helps me build everything. He's there at the workshop, making sure that I cater them. making sure that the food is arriving, making sure that the shoot schedules are on time. Like, he's always been that kind of person for me, and he's been that person throughout my PhD. But I also have a cohort of friends, 6 friends that I graduated with, or 5, there's 6 of us. So I'm the 6th that I graduated with from my undergrad. We all got our degrees in material science. Some of them went on to industry. Mm-hmm. Most of us went on to get our PhDs, and we have a group chat, and we talk almost every day. And we have a space where we could just say what we want and really get anything off of our chest and just be vulnerable and open. And I feel like just talking about the issues that I'm having fixes it like 50%, helps me figure out a way that I can move forward and move through them. And so just having that support system overall, I think, has been the biggest help in me wanting to do all of this stuff. I wouldn't be able to do it without having the people in my life that have supported me in doing it. And that includes my advisor supporting me doing things like outreach, supporting me doing things like going to an internship and, you know, things like that. Like, I wouldn't have been able to do those things if I didn't feel like it was okay to do them. Because as a PhD student, sometimes you feel like it's not okay to do things that aren't research because you have so much to do in your research. But I recognize probably way too late that it was. But I, you know, it happens. And I hope that moving forward, I can help my students recognize that way earlier, that life exists outside of this PhD. And when you're done, life will exist and it'll move on without you if you don't exist with it. And so I think that that's a really important thing that I learned after 4.5 years being in a PhD program.
No, I mean, life is all about learning, and the fact mm-hmm. that you learned it and you have an advisor, you have your five friends and your husband to support you yeah. as well. Because I think sometimes we can get so caught up in what we're doing that even when other people are trying to help us, that we don't want to help ourselves. And I've catched myself all the time. And over the last couple of years, it's been learning what self-care looks like, and definitely last year learning what prioritizing Paul looks like mm-hmm. because I do a lot of different things and I love all the things I do, but then I realize that if I don't show up for myself first, I can't show up well for others.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it got to the point where like I was in chronic pain because I just sleeping, wasn't eating, didn't even realize it over the years that that's what I was doing. And recognizing now that I'm like showing up for myself, seeing how I'm showing up for other people, I'm like, oh my gosh, it could have been like this the whole time. but you know, you live and you learn, and yes. I learned a lot of lessons in that time too. So I don't think that that was wasted time by any means, as far as like my mental health goes. But learning, it had to be something that I learned. It couldn't have been something that someone was just like, well, you should do this. No, it had to be something that I had to learn the hard way. And because I learned it the hard way, I celebrate when I do take those breaks now. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm sitting this morning. I woke up, I'm having coffee and I'm watching TV and I'm doing nothing other than that. I'm not rushing to get to work. On no one else's time but my own. I have set boundaries for myself in the best way, I think. And I'm a better researcher. I'm a better friend. I'm a better wife. I'm a better everything because of it.
Boundaries are so important. Yeah. Yeah. So we've been going for a while, almost an hour. So we're almost out of time. But I want to make sure if there's anything we haven't talked about, whether with yourself, your research, your support system, anything you want to talk about before we wrap things up.
Yeah, I think I would just say that it's okay to not have literally anything figured out. And that is something that I always thought I just had to like fake, like, oh, I know how to do this. I don't need to ask for help. Like, oh, or I'll figure it out by myself without asking for help. And like you said, really? Like having people around you that are offering you help, it's really hard as someone with that type of personality, like I have, to like delegate and let people help you. Because mm-hmm. for me, it was like, well, and I didn't recognize this until I like did some introspection. but for me, it was like, I don't want people to think that I can't do something because I don't want people to think that I'm incompetent. I've been fighting my mm-hmm. entire life for this. I've been fighting my entire life for people to see me, especially in Idaho, as someone who is intelligent, as someone who is equal, as all of these things. And I still, day to day, feel like I'm fighting to just live the life that I feel like I've already worked towards. Yet, as in a PhD, it feels like it goes forever. The finish line just keeps getting moved. But I wish that I had recognized in my undergrad that I was failing classes, but I could have asked for help. I had to work 4 jobs, but I could have gone to the food pantry on campus that's there for that reason. I, in grad school, spent my first 2 years feeling incredibly alone because I felt like everyone around me knew everything and they were so much smarter than me and they didn't have time for me. And I just needed to figure it out by myself. Had I had a conversation with another grad student about feeling that way, I would have recognized that everyone feels that way, every grad student. And so that's something that I keep saying, this is something that I tell my undergrads all the time, but it really is that it's okay to not know what you're doing. That's like, no one knows what they're doing. I've been doing this for a long time and I still come in every day like, what am I doing? And granted, I'm a lot more confident about knowing that I don't know, but it used to be crippling and it used to be at the point where it was like, well, I don't even know where to start. So how do I start? And I hope that that's the message that people get from my story and my trajectory and my journey, is that you don't actually have to know. You just have to try. And that's okay. That's what everybody else is doing. You don't have to be 100% great at everything. You don't have to know what you want to do to go to grad school. You don't have to, you know, do any of that stuff. And so I guess that's what I would leave it off on, is that my story and my trajectory, and honestly, like, coming from a pretty rough upbringing here in Idaho, there are ways for me to have the life that I want without, like, fighting to the point where I'm not taking care of myself and I'm not taking advantage of the people that actually do want to help me and taking advantage of the help that's being offered. So that's really what I would end it with, I think.
No, that's really powerful. Just really making sure that you're leveraging your community and seeking out community. Because I know you mentioned Nesby earlier as well. So shout out to Nesby. I'm a lifetime member, so I'm committed. Love Nesby. But it's, even when you don't have the community, it's for seeking it out. Because I know sometimes you might not see it as easily, but you sought it out. You found it. And I think that's a good thing just for the audience to realize, is that to seek it out, also realize that you may not always know what you're going to do. I would say that coming into college at 18, choosing a major, some people choose something and they know until they graduate and it goes directly into it. But I would argue that 90%, maybe higher, of people graduate and end up doing something that's either different or completely different from what they went to school for.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing, just that they found something that they were more passionate about.
Exactly, yeah. And I hope that, you know, my undergrads always ask me, what should I do? What should I do next? Like, should I go to grad school? Should I go to industry? Like, what do you think? Like, I get that question all the time. And I always tell them there is no wrong answer. Whatever you do, you're going to learn from it. If it's scary, it's probably a good thing. You should do it if it scares you. Because that's where you grow. And it took me a really long time to recognize that. And I would always try to stay in my, like, safe zone, not really, like, venture out of that. I didn't start building my community until almost my last year of undergrad. And I wish that these are things, the things that I'm saying now are things that I wish I had known as a first generation college student that literally has no idea. But not only as a first generation college student, as a human being, like, 18-year-old me thought that I knew everything. I thought I knew everything, and I was scared to not know things. But now, if I don't know something, that's exciting for me. Like, that's a really good place for me to be, because it means I have the opportunity. And I think that that's something that it took me too long to recognize, but I'm glad that I recognize it now.
Yeah. I mean, you're saying too long when I've talked to people in, like, their 50s or 60s and they still don't have it figured out. So I don't think it's too long. I think it's the right time. The timing worked out.
Yeah.
But no, it's been amazing, incredible hearing your story. I want to make sure people know how to stay connected with you and all the incredible things you're doing.
Yeah. So I post a lot on social media. Like I was saying, I am at the Biomed Scientist on Instagram now. I just started that Instagram, at Monet Sawyer on TikTok, and at Monet Sawyer on Instagram with an extra R at the end of that one. But all of my socials are linked together. So if you find one, you could find them all. And then Monet Sawyer on LinkedIn. I share a lot on LinkedIn about things that I'm doing academically that I might not share on socials, especially, like, more details about the things that I'm doing academically. I will share any career changes or anything like that on LinkedIn usually. So those are the places to stay connected with me. And if anyone reaches out and wants to chat personally, you could reach out on my socials and I can send my email for that too. So I really do love to stay connected with especially students who are interested in what I'm doing, and they really just, like, don't know how the process works to get to doing this type of research. So that's something that I'm really, I really get excited to share. So yeah.
So that's awesome. So definitely it's been coming across the screen. If you are watching, if you're listening, you can go to the show notes and make sure you can stay connected with Monet. And it's, yeah, I just blown away by your story. I know I've heard a little bit before, but I think it was the first time I got to hear more of it. I know there's more to it, but as much as what we were able to share in this hour. Yeah. I know we didn't get to talk about, I mean, your recent achievements with winning different awards over the last year, but you're doing so many great things, inspiring so many people. And at the same time, you're also being intentional about helping middle schoolers. Because I think a lot of times they can be overlooked. I do a lot of stuff with college students and young professionals. I feel like middle school is not always talked about. So that's really inspirational.
Thank you. I am really excited about that. So I'm excited. I'll share all the details of that with you after the event. But yeah, thank you for having me. This has been a great conversation. Sure. I've been really looking forward to this, like I said. I look forward to seeing the podcast when it's out.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to have you on. And definitely for those of you who are listening, I know you got something from Monet's story. It's inspiring. The passion she has, the discovery that she shows. Just whenever you're going into something, even if you don't know what it is, seek out help, seek out mentors, ask questions. And you can be incredible.
Be sure to rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We'll see you here next time. And be incredible. Incredible.
Have you enjoyed listening to the Incredible Paul Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some Incredible Paul merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to incredipaul.org/merch, incredipaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your Incredible Paul look.